PPI.org.
This is Disability and Progress. We bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Tonight, we're talking about Usher's syndrome. We are speaking with Trevor Turner. Trevor is a volunteer as an USH ambassador with the Usher Syndrome Coalition. Hopefully I got that right, Trevor. What does an ambassador do?
So an USH ambassador is just simply a volunteer person who has Usher syndrome, or maybe is a parent of somebody who has Usher syndrome, and who can represent and be a resource for people with Usher syndrome in their state. So I volunteer as an USH ambassador for the state of Minnesota.
Excellent. We will get deeper into it, but can you give us a brief explanation of what Usher syndrome is?
Usher syndrome is a recessive genetic condition that is a combination of hearing loss and a progressive vision loss. The progressive vision loss disorder is also known as retinitis pigmentosa. So it can manifest without the hearing loss. So if it does not have the hearing loss, then it's simply retinitis pigmentosa. But if retinitis pigmentosa, or RP, is combined with hearing loss, then it can be Usher syndrome. And there are three different types of Usher syndrome, Usher 1, 2, and 3. And then they, of course, have some subtypes as well.
Yep. Okay, we'll get into that. Tell me about your story. So when and how did you find out that you had Usher syndrome?
So I was born with a severe hearing loss. I received my first pair of hearing aids when I was 2 years old. And so I always had a disability and that I always had a hearing loss. I received 10 years of speech therapy as a child and really only thought that was my only disability. However, when I was about 14 years old as a teenager, I started noticing that my night vision was not as good as my family or my friends. And I was struggling well at night. My eyes weren't adjusting to, you know, dark from light to dark. And so it didn't seem too concerning. I went to an optometrist and they just said, it's just simple night vision loss. It's pretty common. I'm like, okay, well, there's not much you can do about it. But I didn't think much of it until, you know, I started noticing as I got older that it was getting worse and worse and worse. And so finally, when I was 19, I went to an optometrist again, and they referred me to a retina specialist.
Were you driving by then?
I actually just gave up driving a year ago. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's a complicated disorder in that regard, but I was driving. You know, I was typically, I would avoid driving at night, but with like headlights and things like that, I still could see pretty well. And I felt comfortable driving. Doctors probably would say I shouldn't have been driving, but it was kind of, you can only advocate for yourself. And I always felt comfortable driving at night at the time. And it still was pretty, it wasn't as severe. The vision loss wasn't as severe when I was 19. It's just more of a nuisance than it was a disability to me. But when I went to the retina specialist, the first thing that the doctor asked me about was my hearing loss. And I was really confused by that because I didn't come in for my hearing. I know that I was. But she said, yeah, I think they're related. And that was the first time she mentioned Usher syndrome, and that was the first time I ever heard of it.
It wasn't until you were well into you were in your adult life.
Yeah, I was 19 years old, so I was an adult before somebody even mentioned the word Usher syndrome to me. And so then that was just kind of a symptomatic diagnosis. I went to another retina specialist. That's the thing about rare diseases. A lot of times you get referred to specialist. And it can take a while to get a formal diagnosis, but I was formally diagnosed after doing vision testing, and they did notice that my degree of vision loss and my visual field was consistent with that of Usher syndrome, plus with my hearing. It was consistent with Usher's type 2, which I know we'll talk more about. But I that was the first time. And then my vision continued to just slowly, it's very slow progressing disorder, but throughout my 20s, just got a little bit worse and worse. And then it left, started going into my daytime vision as well. And then when I was 25, I was about 6 years later after getting my first symptomatic diagnosis, they finally identified the gene and had genetic testing available. And so they did a genetic test and confirmed that I had USH2A and a genetic disorder.
Is that the only way they really diagnose it? Because, I mean, she kind of jumped to that. I think you have Usher syndrome. And certainly there's other things that can have deaf blind, isn't there? Right.
Exactly. So that's why the genetic testing is the only way to absolutely confirm that it's actually Usher syndrome. Because it could be coincidental. I mean, you could have retinitis pigmentosa and a separate hearing loss caused by, you know, whatever reasons. So they may not actually be related, but that's pretty rare. Usher syndrome is the, you know, the most common form of deaf blindness in the world.
But even Usher syndrome is somewhat rare.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
Is there a typical age that one is diagnosed at?
It's getting earlier and earlier, especially with genetic testing. Now I think it's pretty typical that any child with a hearing loss genetically tested. You know, I used to work for a hearing aid company here in Minnesota, so I got very familiar and I know a lot about hearing loss and how it's diagnosed. You know, when I was born, it was about 2 or 5 years old before you diagnosed the hearing loss. And then typically it would be a teenager or even an adult. I mean, a lot of people my age just find out they've had Usher syndrome in their late 20s, early 30s. But because of genetic testing and just early intervention, they're able to find out quite early. I mean, they can find out when a baby is born at this point because they have identified the genes for all three types.
Is there a gender preference with Usher syndrome?
Current research and prevalence would suggest that there isn't. It affects men and women the same.
It's also, I believe, called Holgren syndrome.
Yes. So Usher syndrome is named after the researcher and the doctor who first discovered it and made the genetic, the hereditary connection. And then Holgren was actually someone who did a lot of significant research on Usher syndrome. However, he focused mostly on type 3. Whereas Usher syndrome is focused on all three types. And so that's why it's more commonly known as Usher syndrome.
Let's take just a short station break.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Metro Transit. Metro Transit now offers use of an app that connects blind and low-vision customers to a live agent for navigation assistance during transit trips. More information at metrotransit.org/AIRA.
You're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. My name is Sam. This is Disability and Progress. You're speaking with Trevor Turner and talking about Usher syndrome. So Trevor, you kind of gave a hint at the beginning. Let's talk about the three types of Usher syndrome.
Really? So there are three types and each type has subtypes, but I'll just broadly talk about the three. We have type one, so Usher syndrome type one. Someone with type one would be born with a profound to deafness, total deafness of hearing loss. And then their retinitis pigmentosa or RP starts very early and progresses very quickly in their childhood, would probably be legally blind before they even become a teenager. And then type two is somebody who's born with a moderate to severe hearing loss that doesn't change. Unlike Usher one, it progresses, but Usher two, you typically are born with a severe hearing loss and it doesn't change throughout your life. It stays pretty consistent. And then the RP starts in adolescence or, about puberty or so. And that is very slow progressing as well. Like I said before, most people with type two sometimes don't get diagnosed until their late 20s or early 30s because of how slow progressing it is. And then Usher type three is the rarest form, but typically you're born with typically healthy hearing, healthy vision, and then you progressively lose your vision and progressively lose your hearing as well. And so that one is, it's rare, but it's of the three, it's the rarest, but it's progressive for both hearing and vision.
Is that one the longest to take to lose hearing and vision, type three?
It's really dependent on the person. I would say they're probably in their 20s or 30s before it becomes pretty significant, where you're wearing hearing aids and probably getting a cochlear implant. And needing to use a cane and have cane training for vision loss and things like that.
And my understanding is there's a certain type that is more found in Jewish culture and Jewish people and Scandinavian maybe too.
Yeah, that's type three. That's really only but now that's what the current research would suggest. I would say that a lot of research has been heavily skewed toward people of European descent. Doing more and more research, they're finding it to be more common in people of South Asian or Indian descent. They're starting to see it more in China and identifying it more in China. So a lot of the data has that kind of bias around European, centers of culture and study because of just typical bias and institutional racism and things like that. So they're becoming more, worldly identifiable and people notice it more in different cultures and different among different races and people as well.
Is it found more than it sounds like it's found more kind of in white Caucasian, or do you see it a lot in other races too?
Primarily white people are identified and diagnosed with Usher syndrome. But like we said before, that's primarily because of just the research that has gone towards primarily studying people of Caucasian or white descent.
Right.
But more and more research, and now you're seeing it in Indigenous American populations, you're seeing it in South Asian and in East Asian. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw it more common in Sub-Saharan African as well.
So I like this. I've worked with people with disabilities, including hearing disabilities, and I often can tell in regards to speech, but yours sounds quite good. It feels like you slowly lost yours as far as, and maybe yours isn't total. Obviously, it's not a total hearing loss. Did you get cochlear implants?
know, I've only relied on hearing aids. I got hearing aids pretty early for somebody who's typically diagnosed with the hearing loss that I have. Mm. I've always had the hearing loss. I mean, when my first audiograms to now look very consistent. But I received my first pair of hearing aids when I was 2 years old and then immediately went into speech therapy.
So that makes a difference.
Yeah. And I was reading and writing because reading and writing were a way to, you know, teach me how to speak and recognize sounds that I couldn't hear, but I could still visualize it. Like the letter S, for example, I don't think I could hear the letter S until I was probably 10 years old when they introduced hearing aids. But I knew of the concept of the S because they show me the letter and then they'd hold my hand up to their mouth, you know, and make the, you know, the hissing sound.
Right, right.
So I knew that that letter exists and that's what I need to do. You know, a great example would be the difference between the word desk and deck. You know, I for the longest time could not hear the difference, but I knew that, you know, desk had an S in it. And so I always made sure to say the S in it.
Right.
So I just had very good speech therapy growing up. And like you said, early intervention with hearing aids. And so I think that played a lot into it. My parents were very good about practicing reading and reading aloud mm-hmm. to me all the time.
Excellent. I had a coworker that I thought was quite brilliant a while back, and he had Usher syndrome. And I would have never been able to tell in his speech because it was quite good. And I think his hearing loss was not significant. He was probably, you know, close to 30. He was totally vision. His vision was totally gone, but he had seizures. I'm wondering, is that something that's common or is that just maybe unfortunately paired with something else?
The current research doesn't associate seizures with as a symptom of Usher syndrome. Like I said, research still needs to be done, but it does have balance issues. So type 2 typically does not have balance issues, but type 1 and type 3 can have balance problems, you know, making it hard to balance because your inner ear is what helps you balance and stay, you know, level. And when you have, you know, a condition that affects your hearing, that can actually make it difficult to stay level.
Yeah. And you haven't found much of that,
no.
Having type 2.
Not for me, no. I've never had any issues with balance.
So talk about, because this is a big thing, you know, when you gave up driving, that's, if you're used to driving and you know you have a disability and you may know it's coming, but you know, talk about that feeling of having to give it up and knowing when, you know, that you should give it up. How was that for you to do that?
I think for
besides
me, that
devastating, maybe.
I think for me, that was probably one of the hardest things that I've had to give up. You know, I've been very fortunate to have a very, international career, and I've been able to travel around the world and live in many different countries. I've lived in 6 different countries and I've traveled to over 50, a lot of that due to my previous job. But, you know, being able to drive, just that independence, a lot of people really take that for granted, especially in the United States where we're such a car-centered culture.
Yes.
When I lived in Europe or when I lived in East Asia or even in Sub-Saharan Africa, you know, everyone takes public transit and public transit gets a lot of significant investment. But in the United States, public transit, especially in the Midwest, tends to be reserved for people with disabilities or low income people.
But I know, it's so sad. and this is where we need it most.
Exactly. And, you know, in Minneapolis, unfortunately, and the Twin Cities in general are a very car-centered design city planning. Now, I think that's changing. Fortunately, we all recognize that it's not sustainable to have a car-centered culture, but that, of course, that is taking time. And so for me personally, you know, it was really hard to give up driving, living in Minnesota, because, you know, it just, there's a lot of parts of the state that are inaccessible to me now because I can't drive to them. And so I think that is probably one of the hardest. And like I said, I only gave up driving over a year ago, about when the pandemic started. For me, the pandemic was an opportunity to just, you know, rip the Band-Aid off, so to speak, because we were all working from home and it just was a lot easier to make that transition when I wasn't, you know, I didn't have to rely on driving to a physical location to work.
Mm-hmm. So talk about what the trigger was that made you say, I have really got to stop.
I think when I really had to stop driving at night, I to the point where I was so uncomfortable, and you know, I could see other cars with their headlights on, but I was struggling to see pedestrians, especially in the city, and I just couldn't. It was just hard to think about the fact that if I'm not careful, or if I kept driving, I could hurt someone. Right. You know, less concerned about me, but more about, you know, hitting someone accidentally because I couldn't see them. So unfortunately, I never had any incidents. A lot of people with Usher syndrome actually have an incident like that forces them to give up driving. Mm-hmm. I fortunately never had that, and I was able to give it up. But like I said, the pandemic was really the thing that okay, I can give up driving now because the transition's a lot easier.
Right.
Pandemic hadn't happened, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure if I would have given it up as when I did.
Now, more and more people, not everyone, obviously, some companies wisely are learning the benefits of, you know, having their people at home, because many can, but some are pushing to go back. And for those who are discovering now, as you did, that they really have to give up their driving. And not just people with disabilities. I think it's, you know, there's an elderly population too that eventually realizes, crap, I can't keep doing this, or I should give it up, but I don't want to give it up. That's a big independence. Sometimes it feels like it's a bigger crutch than their disability or their aging. So what do you tell those people? Like, what's your advice to them?
No, I would say that it's really difficult to give up driving in the United States. And, you know, it's not that hard, like I said, in Europe or in East Asia, another country that have really invested in public transportation, and where public transportation is something that is everyone uses. It's not limited to a certain group. And so when that happens, you don't feel as excluded from society. But in the United States, when you have a car-centered culture, you do feel excluded. And that can be really, really, really difficult, especially if you're someone who's never really used public transit before. And I was fortunate that I got to use public transit systems all over in different countries around the world. And so I was comfortable with that concept. So I think for people who have to give up driving, you know, I think I would tell people is that it's okay to grieve it. And you might
want a
therapist, you know, like a grief counselor, because I mean, that's what it is for a lot of people. When you're losing your vision, a lot of the feelings you have are grief because you're losing something that, you know, that you really took for granted or you valued a lot, you know? And so I hear people all the time say, you know, I would never want to lose my vision. That'd be the worst disability. I'd rather lose a leg or I'd rather lose my hearing, but never my vision. But someone who lost both or has a hearing loss and I'm losing my vision, I'm starting to learn that there's a lot more to blindness than what the preconceived notions are and what society's stereotypes of what being blind is like. And even Usher syndrome, when we say deaf blind, you know, we don't mean totally deaf and totally blind. It's a different way of seeing that living in this world with that, you know, built around people who can see, you know, have total peripheral vision, that's where it makes it a disability. But, you know, most people with Usher syndrome still retain some vision.
What kind of support systems would you suggest people have in place when they learn that they have Usher syndrome?
You know, from my personal experience, I actually went to go see therapists and talk to about it. And I struggled to find a therapist that I could really, really benefit from, because, you know, you need a therapist that can specialize in disability, and that's not very common.
That's hard to find.
Yes. And so, you know, for me, when I discovered a network of people with Usher syndrome, you know, using Facebook through the Usher Syndrome Coalition and finding other people, especially people who are around my own age, you know, other millennials with Usher syndrome, and then setting up Zoom call. That was the kind of the great thing during the pandemic. We made Zoom calls and Zoom happy hours and things like that. We made that Zoom call. And so it was really easy to organize that and get people on. So, you know, we had a Millennials with Usher Zoom group, and I found that more cathartic, more helpful than any therapy ever was. And so I think just meeting other people and talking to other people who have the same experience, especially someone of your own age, you know, a lot of things we talked about, all of us have partners or spouses and who don't have ushers. And so that is a big challenge in a relationship, is that, you know, not being able to fully verbalize what you're feeling and what you're, you know, what you can see and what you cannot see. And that can be hard on a partner who's trying to understand, but can't, doesn't know how to experience that. And that can cause relationship problems. And so, but being able to talk about that with other millennials who are going through the same thing, it just was really, really helpful and put things in perspective and made you feel not alone at all. So I think my, you know, the best support group you can get is to talk to somebody, even if it's on the internet or on a phone, to talk to somebody else who has the same thing as you. Because I think doctors and other people who don't have ushers can be really clinical and cold and sometimes a bit doomsday, you know, thinking it's the worst thing in the world. And, you know, it's just another way of living, and talking to other people who have that same way of living just makes you feel a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and imagine too, you know, if your spouse knew you before things were very bad, they don't really have a concept. And then they watch things progress. And that can be, it's a life-changing thing for both of you.
Absolutely. You know, for my partner, we met, I was still driving. I had a different job than I do now. And that job, I traveled about 50% of the year internationally. And so I was living a very independent, you know, very, you know, kind of exciting life, so to speak, that was, I didn't rely on people so much. And so, but then that started, that transition happened. And, you know, I started relying on him more and more, you know, for support, for getting around at night. You know, especially now that I give up driving, I rely on him for rides, for, you know, getting groceries, running errands that I can't do. And so, you know, that kind of, it truly changed the dynamic of our relationship.
Right.
Unfortunately, he's been really great throughout the whole thing and very accepting and understanding. And I mean, we're still together. So it's been, you know, 4.5 years.
That's important.
But I would say the last 4.5 years have been the most dramatic change in my lifestyle because of Usher syndrome. And so the fact that he's been through it, you know, it says a lot about him.
We need to take another small station break.
Smiling nowhere. Programming on KFAI is supported by the Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington County's Energy Assistance Program. The Energy Assistance Program helps low-income households pay a portion of their heating bills. Community Action of Ramsey, Washington assists Ramsey and Washington County residents with home energy payments, energy crises, and emergency furnace repair. They also offer referrals to the Home Weatherization Program. More information about how to apply at 651-645-6470 or at caprw.org.
I'm in a particular vibe, electric buzzing inside of me. Ain't gonna let it go, I'ma stay on this ride. Soaring to new heights, like a plane in flight. Don't know my destination, but I'm digging the sights. My point is where I'm at, I'm just loving my life. Can't complain, I ask for more, the balance feels right. Let's switch a complete opposite, make it more positive. So you win how I love when you're breathing in your oxygen. Discard the toxic poison that's corrupting. And our minds like hate, greed, that's what I find disgusting. I'm on the top of the mountain, boy, now watch me plummet. And as I free fall down the sky, man, I'm glad I done it. Get me a better perspective on what to hold close. Never take it for granted, someday it goes. The message I convey might be cheesy and corny. If you inject a little bit of love every day, it's better surely. Formula where we don't often focus. The media are feeding your footage that's atrocious. So I'ma look away from the images that's ferocious. And when I do, I see the beauty, and that's how I wrote this. See, I would often wonder, assume my life is hopeless. But honestly, to tell the truth, it feels like it's a bonus. Cause it molded me into a good man. Treating people how you want to be treated is what I understand. So let me just elaborate. Cause the thing I aggravate is negativity. It knows that I don't gravitate towards its darkness. Happiness is what I generate. Tries to plot a scheme for this feeling to evaporate. But my mind's protected by positive armor. As I journey on my saga and surpass all this drama, create my world of acceptance. So join me if you want a more. Love on this planet is exactly what we're after.
And you're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This is Disability and Progress. My name is Sam, and we're speaking with Trevor Turner. Charlene, I was just wondering if you had any questions for Trevor. This is kind of the time that I let my research person ask anything if she wants.
First of all, I really appreciate your descriptions. You're very... It makes a lot of sense the way you're speaking to us, that sometimes people get a little bit too aloof or whatever, or too vague. And I think you're hitting it right in the right spot. One of the things I would wonder about is what, when you're part of this ambassador group, what do you do? Do you speak to organizations or?
Yeah. So we primarily, you know, for me, I like to serve as a resource. You know, when somebody in Minnesota finds out that they have Usher syndrome, you know, I want to be there to talk to them and let them know, like, what's the best ways to kind of move forward and deal with it, so to speak. But we also, we'll talk to different organizations. I've talked to, you know, many hearing loss or deaf organizations. And there's a deafblind school here in Minnesota that I've spoken at. It's just kind of networking and kind of just bringing awareness to Usher syndrome. And, you know, we do radio interviews just like we're doing now, TV spots, and just, like I said, being the ambassador and trying to educate people about it and try to assuage any kind of misconceptions about Usher syndrome and things like that.
And what is the most common misconception on Usher syndrome?
I think the most common misconception is, you know, I can talk from my own experience in that when I was 19 and I was diagnosed with Usher syndrome, my doctor point blank told me that I would probably never meet somebody else with Usher syndrome. It was that rare. Oh. Fortunately, he was wrong. And yeah. He also told me that I would be totally blind before I was 30. And so I lived my 20s thinking that I was going to lose all my vision before I was 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And that never happened. Now, like I said, it does progress differently for different people. And also your lifestyle can affect it. You know, if you're a smoker, that can make things worse. Right. But if you wear sunglasses with UV protection, you can prolong your vision because UV light can really affect the progression as well. And so protecting your vision and, you know, eating healthy, exercising, all those typical things to stay healthy will also make your eyes stay healthy longer. And I think the misconception that deafblind means totally deaf or totally blind is not true. Deafblind is a range of different things and a range of different types of vision loss. You know, there are other types of vision loss too, like macular degeneration, that have very similar symptoms, but are not quite the same. You know, there are other types of vision loss where you lose your central vision first, and then your peripheral vision. But with Usher syndrome and retinitis pigmentosa, you typically start losing your night vision, your peripheral vision first. And For many people, your central vision stays intact. You know, my doctor himself has said you'll probably keep your central vision for a very, very long time. So I think, you know, I can still use a computer. I can still use my smartphone. I don't generally need to use Braille or anything like that. But that's different depending on the nature of your vision loss. So I think that's just like understanding that blindness comes in a spectrum and that hearing loss comes at a spectrum. Not everyone uses ASL. Not everyone, you know, some people need a cochlear implant, but some people would be just fine with hearing aids. And so I think just understanding that it comes at a variety. You know, I sometimes use a vision cane to help me get around, especially in areas that I'm not familiar with. But then other times I don't use it. And I think sometimes I get looks, like when I get on the bus with a cane and then sit down and start using my phone.
Oh.
People will say, well, how can you see your phone? Why are you using a cane? And for me, it's primarily because I struggle to see, you know, objects that are low on the ground. So I have a risk of tripping over things or not seeing things come from my sides quickly enough to avoid them. And so the cane helps kind of give me that warning if something's coming up. But I still can, you know, like I said, I still use my phone. I can still read. I still look people in the eyes when I am talking to them because I can still see faces. And so I think just that kind of misconception, like teaching people that blindness doesn't mean blackness. It doesn't mean dark.
Is Usher syndrome something you grow old with? There's no longevity thing triggered with it?
Yeah, so most people live totally normal life expectancy. You know, as you get older, it will get worse and worse. And eventually, sometimes people, if you're much older, especially with type 2, you might lose all your vision. You might get to a point where you don't have any really useful vision left. Again, it depends on the person and where in their lifestyle and where they're at with it, but you typically grow with it. But like I said, there's different types. So 1, 2, and 3 will manifest itself differently as you get older, but you do grow with it and it does continue to progress as long as you live.
And where can people go to find out more about Usher syndrome?
The best place, you know, Usher Syndrome Coalition is a great organization that has a lot of really great resources. Their website is usher-syndrome.org. And there's also the Usher Syndrome Society. They do a lot of work around, you know, arts and entertainment and, you know, showcasing Usher syndrome in a, you know, a different way, not so clinical. The Usher Syndrome Coalition does a lot of work with, you know, trying to find and work with, you know, clinical studies and things like that, doing more research on it. And then, of course, there's lots of support groups on Facebook, especially other people. I think the best resource for Usher syndrome is to talk to people with Usher syndrome themselves, mm-hmm. because they're going to give you the actual reality of living with it and not what a doctor says. You know, I think doctors tend to over be too vague, or, you know, they focus too much on the clinical thing. They focus too much on the vision loss and the,
right.
and the
technical. Instead of just living your life.
Right. And they don't necessarily have good advice for how to live with it. So talking to someone with Usher's is probably the best way to learn about it.
And I presume there's parenting groups out there as well, in case, you know, parents need advice for their kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely a different support group for parents with Usher syndrome. I would even say spouses and partners with someone with Usher syndrome, having a support group for them, because, you know, it can be a challenge, especially if you don't know what it's like. If you, you know, sometimes it's really hard for someone with Usher syndrome to like verbalize what they're experiencing. You know, I can't give you my eyes so that you can see what I'm seeing.
Right.
And sometimes I can see in certain situations, and sometimes I can't. And it's very dynamic and changing. And that can be very frustrating, because for a parent or for a partner, you sometimes overthink it and think that I can't see at all, or I'm never going to be seeing a certain situation. But sometimes, but then I perform really well, and then they, oh yeah, he can see fine. But then I struggle. And so there never seems to be a happy medium. And so it can be really challenging as a parent or a partner to just really know. And, you know, sometimes as a person with Usher's, it's just hard to explain. I don't know. Something, you know, like, what can you see? When can you see this? Will you be able to see this? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know until I'm living it.
So. Right. So can you give us a website again where people can go and find out more?
Yeah, absolutely. So Usher Syndrome Coalition, you can just Google that. It's probably the easiest, but it's also usher-syndrome.org.
Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with? We really appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. You know, I take disability advocacy very seriously. My last job focused on disability advocacy for hearing loss, and now I am the public policy director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. And so I'm always advocating and trying to educate people about not just vision and hearing loss, but also other disabilities, developmental disabilities, physical disabilities, mm-hmm. all of that kind of thing. You know, I think that we as a society need to really focus and think about disability and how do we incorporate universal design and making spaces accessible for everyone. Because we all know that universal design benefits everyone, not just
yes.
people with disabilities. But I think that, you know, for so long, people with disabilities, especially deafblind people, were ignored or marginalized, pushed to the side, institutionalized, and it can be really isolating. And so I think the most important thing, if you're somebody who doesn't have a disability yet, you know, I always say, think about disability, if you're lucky to live long enough, you will have a disability at some point in your life. As we talked earlier, being elderly is a disability.
Right.
And so I think that if you're not someone who identifies yet as a disability, you know, thinking about how you would live your life if you had a disability and what you would want from everyone else, and, you know, paying that forward and really listening to people with disabilities, listening to what they say. You know, so I think people with disabilities, we don't want to just be heard, but we also want opportunities to be at the decision-making table.
Right.
And so when you're working in policy or design and, you know, bring in somebody with disabilities and then take their opinions and their expertise very seriously, and you'll find really good solutions for a lot of making things more accessible.
Well, Trevor, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. We've been speaking with Trevor Turner. Trevor is a volunteer. He volunteers as an Usher ambassador with the Usher Syndrome Coalition. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
KPI.org.